Welcome to today's episode of Lexicon. I'm Christopher McFadden, contributing writer for Interesting Engineering. Today we sit down with Gidi Minas Guabo, but before our new episodes, check out our educational platform, the IE Academy. From IE to data, we'll provide top quality courses with live and interactive workshops with professional instructors, and you're invited to join the community. Now let's continue with today's episode. Gidi Minas, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. For our audience's benefit, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, so in general, I'm a technical guy. I'm an engineer in the past with experience over 20 years in different areas, mostly in software engineering, but also in hardware engineering. And after I started my company, Grand Autonomy, that focuses on UAVs on drones. I've also got a lot of experience in aerodynamics and mechanical engineering, carrier engineering, embedded devices, and so on and so on. So yeah, in general, I have quite broad experience in different areas. Here in Grand Autonomy, I'm also an operator, and by the way, I'm a drones operator for last 10 years. So I had very simple operations here in Lithuania, like military different operations and so on, to operations or missions behind enemy lines. I have battlefield experience flying like tens of kilometers behind enemy lines, doing reconnaissance there, fighting with Russian jammers, looking for their equipment and so on and so on. So yeah, my experience is quite broad, but yeah, mostly I am technical guy, but at the same time, now I am more into a business.
Okay, so your experience, you've designed drones, actually used them in combat. So wow, okay, well, we'll try to get into more detail in a bit. What are some of the key technical advances or advancements in Grand Autonomy's drones? How do these features enhance their effectiveness in combat?
The most different thing comparing with other drone companies, Grand Autonomy is not just another drone platform company that just like integrate or just gets different components, puts them together, and that's what makes those drones. Actually, we are focusing on critical components for drones. So first of all, data link. So we have developed and tested, and that's actually what we were testing at the front lines. We have tested on data link that is jamming resilient. So yeah, we have proven in Ukraine against Ukrainian jammers, later at the front lines against Russian jammers. So that is our knowledge. And that knowledge, that experience started 10 years ago. So we collected quite a lot of experience and quite a lot of knowledge about Russian electronic warfare capabilities, and that's what allowed us to create jamming resilient data link. The other thing, of course, inertial system that allows us to fly in GNSS denied environments, but probably the most critical, the most complicated component of the UAV are gimbals. So that's what we developed for last 7 or 8 years. So in general, from the beginning, when we started to design drones in 2017, we were developing gimbals for ourselves too, because there were no in the market such small gimbals what we can fit in our small UAVs. That's why we started to design gimbals too. So, oh well. That allowed us to gain a lot of experience in mechanics and electronics and how gimbals works from software and development side, in sensors, how to choose those sensors, how to choose optics, how to put everything together and ensure that they perfectly work together. So yeah, that's what makes us different. We know not only drones, how to fly them, but we know deep in details we have a lot of know-how about those critical components because, yeah, we are developing them.
See, so do your drones use a lot of off-the-shelf third-party parts then, or mostly in-house developed?
Some of them, but yeah, a lot of parts are developed in our company because, yeah, electronics, software development, mechanics, and so on is developed in our company. And yeah, in general, our drone is classified as military drone.
Of course,
for military purposes only. So yeah, that's not something what you can just buy off the shelf.
Yeah. That's fair enough. Obviously, you can't tell me too much anyway, I'm sure. So from your experience on the front lines in Ukraine, what have you learned about the practical applications and limitations of drone technology in modern warfare?
Yeah, just was thinking now if actually, yeah, I think I found more things when I, yeah, I learned more things about drones when I like found limitations. Of course, limitations in general, like, for example, in GNSS, denied environment, when you do a target correction. Of course, that is a limitation as you don't have precise coordinate and you need to keep updating UAV's coordinate to provide a precise coordinates of the target. But yeah, I think that is a limitation for now, maybe. But yeah, in a year or maximum in 2 years, that limitation will just be gone. Because yeah, a lot of companies, okay, maybe not a lot of companies, but there are really some very good products already in the market that provides a precise coordinate for you using just optical navigation. So yeah, that is a maybe problem now, part of the problem, but yeah, I'm sure it will be solved in a year or so. The same with jamming. So yeah, for example, for our kind of UAVs, like reconnaissance UAVs, jamming is already not a problem because yeah, both UAVs are quite sophisticated and jammer is just useless against them. And that's not something unusual for our UAV because yeah, in general, Ukrainians fly above Russian occupied territories and Russians can do anything by using Conley jammers, and Russians flies above Ukrainian territory and Ukrainians can do anything about that. So that's not something new, but where we see jammers really work, we work against FPV drones, at least they did a few months ago, right? Now we see more and more like this limitation goes away too, because a lot of frequencies were introduced, not only those civil frequencies. And I think jamming kind of killer was optical cable, right? When Russians started to use them and demonstrated like jammers just were completely useless after it was introduced. So yeah, there are limitations, but those limitations, let's say, they limits us just today. Tomorrow probably will be completely different. So, and yeah, that's actually how it work goes. If you have limitation today, probably it won't be limitation, I don't know, in a month, in a 6 months or so. So, yeah.
Have you seen it advance a lot, jamming capability, throughout the, was it 1,000 days now in Ukraine, or was it sophisticated at the start and it's just got more sophisticated now? If that makes any sense.
I think mostly radio links or data links have improved to overcome those jammers. Because from physical perspective, jammers are not really on that strong side. And for data links, for radio links, for communication, it always will be easier to overcome jammers and somehow even run away from them and ensure communication. So yeah, I can't really say that jammers have improved a lot. They did, of course they did. But still data links have improved much, much more.
Okay, all right. Are you finding yourself, is there any say with Starlink, I'm not sure, I don't know if you can talk about it, but has there been a move towards the use of things like Starlink for data links for drone usage or not? Is it mostly ground stations and things?
It's mostly ground station things, but definitely it can help and helps in bigger drones. Like, for example, what we saw from, I know, maybe even 2 years ago, we saw it using in boats, in USVs, right? Now we see it even in drones, in air drones, like even in Shahed. So yeah, bigger drones definitely can carry onboard Starlinks, and yeah, that can be used as a data link. But yeah, for the most cases, it's a ground thing, and yeah, as Ukrainians joke, I know 1 or 2 years ago, every Ukrainian soldier or operator on the ground, in one pocket we have mobile phone, and in another pocket we have Starlink. And yeah, that's the reality, because yeah, there are a lot of them. So yeah, Starlink definitely as technology changed the world, and it keeps changing. That is the, I know, a great invention and provides a great advancement for Ukrainians.
Yeah, because the receiver would be quite heavy, so it's limited to the larger drones, like you say, isn't it? Smaller drones, yeah, not really possible yet. I see. So how has Grand Autonomy achieved such widespread integration of its drones within Ukrainian military? What challenges did you face during this process, if any?
So I think what helped us to ensure that our products will reach front lines was actually participating in tests in Ukraine and going to front lines and doing tests there and showcasing how our system works. Because yeah, we started to send our systems to Ukraine in 2022 March, so just after a few weeks after war started. But yeah, initially we were just collecting feedback from operators who were working there, and that was not enough actually for us to get a little bit more clear picture how everything works and what needs to be improved. And we were sending them, we send them a lot, but yeah, that improvements, products improvements, were not so great as we did after we started to go to Ukraine on our own. And that was completely different experience when you are participating in even in range tests, trying to fight Ukrainian jammers who are probably one of the best in the world. And then you understand, okay, how it works and what you need to do to overcome them. That was first step. And yeah, then second step, when we started to go to the front lines and operate there and absorb all that environment, what is going on there, continuous bombing, jamming, spoofing, and jamming not only from Russian side, but only from Ukrainian side. And that's the usual thing. And then you start to care that, okay, you can't go too low because someone can, even from Ukrainian side, someone can shoot down your drone and so on, so on. So there was, we got a lot of experience there, and that experience helped us to improve that product, to make it really good product, not on paper, like testing only in civil, peaceful environment, but testing in real environment, understanding what actually is needed for product to make it capable to work at the front line in those harshest, in that harshest environment. So yeah, I think that is the most critical thing, what we have learned and how we have built that product and ensured that it was accepted by all Ukrainian forces and it is used in Ukraine.
Yeah, something you keep mentioning, which I've never considered before, is yeah, sort of friendly fire jamming from your yes. own forces. Is that a big problem in drone warfare that you found?
We didn't lost any one of our drones ourselves, but I remember other operators saying that no one else shut down so many of our drones as our members, our troops. So yeah, blue on blue is a big problem, and yeah, that's very natural because even your drone can look like not real, like a Russian drone. No one knows actually who's yeah. that drone, and drone in general is a threat, right?
Yeah.
And when you see one, you don't really think, is it mine? Is it not mine? You just want to it go away, and you don't care about it, and. That is a normal thing about jammers also, but yeah, of course there is like lineman or arrangement. If, for example, fighting starts and all jammers turns on and so on, so yeah, always you get kind of a green corridor to make you able to return safely your bird back home. So yeah, that part is okay, but yeah, still. Spoofing, jamming, firing is a problem for both sides.
Yeah, it must be quite scary for the frontline troops. Like you say, you don't know if it's friend or foe. Because you could even have Ukrainian markings on it, but it could be the Russians, like you say, spoofing you, pretending to be yeah, horrible. Well, war's horrible anyway, but added element. My God.
Enemies, drones working above you, and yeah, many things.
I presume they're using similar drone models, the Russians and the Ukrainian troops, apart from your own, obviously. I presume they look basically the same from the ground. Russian drones and Ukrainian drones, the ones they're using in combat, presumably they look very similar from the ground.
In general, it's hard to see them because usually, for example, we even operate even at 30 kilometers distance. We operate usually at least 800 meters above the ground. And from that distance, it's all our bird almost is invisible.
Right, right.
So, yeah, and if you work like 1.5 kilometers high, then it's even more harder. So yeah, it's really hard to see. But for example, when you return home, usually you return around 500 meters above ground. So yeah, it's more likely that someone will see you.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So it leads into my next question, really. So how does the feedback from Ukrainian forces on the battlefield shape the development and refinement of your drone technology? Or how has it changed the design, if any? Of your drones?
In the beginning of 2022, when we started to send our UAVs, we were sending our second generation UAVs, what were capable to do reconnaissance up to 12 kilometers. And that was fixed thing type UAV. Everything was fine. But yeah, Ukrainians showed that copters can reach further than that. So copters were covering close distances, like they were able to do reconnaissance up to 12-15 kilometers, and we found out that okay, such kind of fixed thing UAV is not needed anymore because it's much more complicated to operate, it's much more complicated to build. So yeah, that actually pushed all the ranges all or yeah, ranges what at least how much what distance should make or should reach fixed wing type UAV pushed quite a lot to the front. So yeah, now I think minimum distance what is very required for fixed wing to be acceptable at the front lines is around maybe 30 kilometers or so, because even FPV drones can reach 20, 25 kilometers, and even bringing 2 kilograms or 3 kilograms warheads. And I know what now some FPVs are reaching even further. So yeah, actually Ukrainians, their innovations push boundaries of drones quite a lot.
Really?
If in 2022 even fixed wings usually were reaching like 30 kilometers, now everyone is talking about 70, 80,
wow,
90 kilometers. So yeah, boundaries are pushed quite a lot. And yeah, I think that is kind of normal because yeah, the world dictates what, yeah, you need to go forward. You need to reach targets or do reconnaissance much, much further behind Finland Alliance. So yeah.
Yeah, it does seem like a crucible there for drone technology. It must have advanced more than you could have possibly imagined, even in what, 2-3 years?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, this is, let's say it in that way, this is the best time for now to develop drone technologies because especially for Ukraine, they are at war, so they don't have other choice. But for other countries, neighbor countries like Lithuania, for us, it's like 24 hours and we can be at the front lines and test our stuff there, like in real environment, against real jammers. So yeah, that really helps us to develop new technologies and to understand what is needed tomorrow.
What will be tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so are you seeing a big kind of push for FPV quadcopters, or copter drones? For recon and then the fixed wing drones for what, suicide attacks and hitting tanks and things, or not? Are they kind of being specialized into different roles, different kinds of drones, or is it just kind of a mixture?
I think there will be a mixture because fixed wing UAVs always will be able to reach much further targets that are much further comparing with copters. So yeah, but if you have targets closer in reach of a copter, you always will use a copter because copter is much cheaper to build. For example, FPV drone, even the one that can go 20, 25 kilometers, costs around, I know, up to 1,000 euros, right? And to build a such fixed thing UAV will cost you much, much more. So yeah, for ranges that copters can reach, you always will want to use a copter or FPV drone. Yeah.
Okay. And they're more versatile, presumably, the copter ones for infantry, I would have thought. Easy to deploy, and because you need to close support, don't you?
Yeah. And then fixed wing UAVs or loitering munitions will be used for more strategical targets like radars, jammers, air defense systems, and so on.
So let's say like the traditional aircraft, the helicopter would provide close support.
Yeah.
The troops and the fixed wing, more like an air force.
Yeah, close support because 25 kilometers, now it's not close.
Fair enough. Okay. So could you elaborate on the role of drone technology in the broader geopolitical landscape, particularly in ensuring the security of the Baltic states and Europe, if possible?
Yeah, so I think even a year ago, and maybe it's still the case, but many countries were arguing if drones actually will change those heavy equipment like tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, and so on, or artillery. And yeah, I think now is kind of agreement, but yes, FPV drones didn't change artillery and probably they won't, but they expanded their capabilities because using only artillery, we wouldn't reach that point when, yeah, what situation now is at the front lines? 10 kilometers range from both sides, no one is moving. There is just no life at all. Because if there is someone moving, trying to move from place to place, they are destroyed immediately using FPV drones. And that's not something what artillery can do. Artillery can fire at more or less static positions, so non-moving objects. And FPV drones can reach anything else. And even, FPV drones were started to be used even against a single person. So that shows just how cheap they became. So definitely drones changed the situation in war, and seems like countries are agreeing, but actually it made it is a game changer. And I'm very happy that, for example, in Lithuania, 8 months ago, 12 months ago, no one really talked about FPV drones in armed forces. Now we have deliveries to armed forces. We have training in armed forces, training for to operate FPV drones. So that changed completely. And I see more and more countries started to talk, we need to get that technology. We need to start manufacturing drones in our countries, because that's the future. And especially when we see not only air vehicles, like unmanned air vehicles, we see all kinds of unmanned vehicles, surface vehicles, ground vehicles, underwater vehicles, and so on and so on. A lot of them, different kind of types, and all of them doing something. And I think in future, we just will see more and more kind of drones doing different stuff. So I think it did change already how politics looks or sees drones, and I'm sure it will change in future even more.
It'd be interesting to see how it changes military doctrine. I know you mentioned artillery, see, they're great for spotting, like balloons during World War One. Obviously, tanks are suffering heavily. Heavy armor is suffering from drone attacks. Be interesting to see how that, if tanks are a thing in 20, 30 years. I know it's one of those things. They've been saying that for the last 60 years, but this might be the end of tanks.
Probably. It's hard to see. It's hard to say for me because, my most experienced military is operating drones. Uh-huh. So I can just say how it's easy to spot artillery or tank, which is very hot in general when we work or move somewhere. So using thermal cameras and so on, so on. So that is their weakness because, they can be very easily spotted. And that can be also a reason for them, like why we are already moved away from the front lines, far, far away from the front lines. But I think going forward, we will be moved even further because, cheap munition, precise munition, like FPV drones reaching further and further. So, all that expensive equipment needs to be hidden or moved away from the front lines. And at some point, I think we will reach that point when we will say that, tanks probably will be used just for some tactics.
Really?
Or, for dynamic war, for dynamic fights. You don't have time to, deploy drone operators, make them safe to operate drones or something. So maybe in more dynamic war, tanks will be useful more. But what we see in Ukraine in those static positions in general, tanks lost quite both sides loses quite a lot of bad heavy equipment.
And are you seeing any innovation in sort of trenches, trench design or technology to counter drones? Or it's just more kind of using more camouflage or, overhead protection over the trenches? I haven't been there. I can't say, but...
Yeah, so even now, Ukrainians hide in, under, I know, in 3 meter deep trenches. So, yeah, so it's already the case because, yeah, again, FPV drones are really precise things. And if you will allow them to find you and to fly, I know, even in a tunnel to reach you, they will do that. And so, yeah, there is no other way how to hide a lot, like hide very deep underground, especially with, yeah, if you talk about Russians, Russians use quite a lot of those Cap 500s. So that is very, very important. Or only one way to hide from them is just to dig deep and hide deep underground. So, yeah, and for drones, I think, yeah, that will be the same thing. Maybe at some point we will extend our, or we will make drones so much autonomous, or we will introduce maybe some kind of other radio links to ensure that we won't need people close to the front lines, or we will be able to stay in a safe place. But yeah, for now, I think, yeah, the safest place is, especially when we talk about Russia, is deep, deep underground.
It sounds like they can follow you down there, though. That's quite sinister. So, yeah, even if it gets into the trench, you can follow the trench and go into tunnels. Oh, my God.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's what we see at the front lines.
Oh, as if it wasn't scary enough. Okay. All right. Moving to the next question. What sets Grant's FPV quadcopters, and is it the Hornet XR drone, apart from other military drones in design capability and deployment? You've kind of touched on this a bit. But.
Yeah, so our reconnaissance drone is called the Hornet XR. FPV drone is called Mosquito. And yeah, what it makes different from other FPV drones. So in general, yeah, again, we used our experience in electronic warfare and we made much more reliable or much more resilient radio link against jammers. And yeah, again, we have proved it in Ukraine. So yeah, that's one thing. Another thing, you can see it in most of the drones of one or other capabilities. We have added also terminal guidance. So that also allows if you are losing line of sight with your drone and that what means what probably you will lose control over it too, you can use terminal guidance to lock drone on the target and then the drone will follow that target autonomously without any input from the operator. So yeah, those are probably two the most critical features that we are adding to each of our drones.
Well, that's interesting. So it's a bit like fire and forget at the end. If you lose signal,
yeah,
hit that.
Yeah, yeah. Last mile delivery.
Yeah, if you like. Yeah. So can it track a moving target then?
Yes, exactly.
Wow, that's impressive. Okay. Again, we kind of talked about this, but we'll ask it anyway. How do you envisage the future of drone technology in warfare? And what ethical considerations does this raise?
Yeah. So mostly, yeah, ethical considerations is mostly about autonomy, right? About finding targets and about deciding allowing for drones to decide is it their targets or no. So yeah, I think that's the most scariest thing. And yeah, I know how it will evolve going forward, but yeah, that's the scariest thing for me. That if we will move to that direction, but drones will decide is it their target or not? Maybe there can be some safety measures or something, but yeah, I hope we won't reach that point. But yeah, even if we will play according to those rules, what drone can't decide it doesn't mean that Russians will go the same way or other countries. So, yeah. For myself, that's the scariest thing.
Yeah, okay. Do you envisage a future where human soldiers like a tank would be now, becomes obsolete, they're too expensive to use against like a large swarm of drones? Would there be a time in the future where even infantry becomes obsolete or not cost-effective, want of a better term to use, on the battlefield? Or there's always going to be a role for infantry, even with drones? Big question.
I think at some point we'll reach that point. That won't be like in 2 years or even 5 years, but I think we are going to that direction. Because, yeah, again, you don't want to waste human lives there, right? So we always will try to use robots or autonomy to fight against our potential enemy. So, yeah, I think it will be in that way. But, yeah, there is like a kind of rule that you don't have that land, you don't rule that land until there is no, like, boots on the ground, right? So, yeah, and anyway, finally, human will need to go there and stay there. But, yeah, we will see. I do expect, but, yeah, we will use more drones, yeah, for that purpose, to ensure that we are saving our human lives, yeah.
Yeah, but with the actual engaging, killing a target, do you ever foresee a future where that will be autonomously, decided by the drone, or is always going to be a human in the command chain? You know, yes, you can kill that, or not.
I'm sure drones will be able to decide that, because, yeah, as I said, even we had different mine agreements, right? You do not use one kind or another kind of mines, but yeah, it doesn't work with all countries. And we see it in Ukraine too. So in general, with drones, I see it in the same way. Even if we would agree, okay, let's do not go there, but drones decide, can we destroy a target or no? So even if we will decide to do not go that way, it doesn't mean that our enemy will agree with that too. Probably not, because we will see it as our weakness. So I would say we need to work on that direction, but at the same time, use it very carefully, or try to avoid using it. So that's my position. But yeah, again, I live next to Russia. I know what we are for last, I know how many years. So yeah, I don't want to be like I know what they will do, and they will go the way which ensures their victory, and they won't care about like human lives, even their humans or soldiers. So yeah, we need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, and that could even include civilians, presumably non-combatants.
Yes, exactly.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't need to dwell on that. Okay. While you your technology focuses on military applications, do you see the potential for your drones in the civilian sector, such as search and rescue or disaster response operations?
Sure. Many components what we develop, or at least our experience, can be used in civil life, because yeah, some of those components are dual purpose or can be converted into a dual purpose. For example, like even data link, which is military purpose now, but yeah, it can be adapted for civil use and to ensure, especially for like a law enforcement. But we would have a reliable link. It doesn't matter what, because yeah, we see that even jammers. Everyone in the world can buy a jammer from China. It's not a problem. You can't use it legally, of course, but you can buy it. So yeah. So at some point, I think we can see those issues like someone or some officers were unable to use their radios because someone was jamming them and in civil life. So yeah, that's one thing. Gimbals, our gimbals definitely are dual purpose, and all the reconnaissance drones. Actually, we were working in not only we were using our drones not only for our military purpose in the past, for example, for border patrol, for police needs, for searching people, yeah, search and rescue. So yeah, definitely they can be used. And the thing or the fact that we are used in the battlefield just confirms what they can be used in most difficult environment.
Absolutely. Let's hope for better days then. Maybe you can get some civilian contracts. So how has Lithuania's innovation ecosystem supported Grand Autonomy's growth? And what further steps could be taken to position the country as a potential leader in drone technology, in your view?
Yeah, so after 2022, a lot of new companies were established here in Lithuania to work on defense sector, to work on new technology, technologies that can be used in defense. A lot of new funds or venture capital funds were established to support defense, because before 2022, there were zero venture capitals that were supporting defense. So yeah, that's changing a lot. We got a lot of focus on technologies, and most importantly, if before 2022 the most engineers were focusing on civil applications, now we find more and more very good engineers who says, okay, I want to make a difference, I want to work for defense, I want to join you. And that's very great, because we get motivated people who wants to focus on defense, who wants to understand what defense is about, and they feel proud about that. So yeah, that for us as a country who is very close to Russia, who feels probably that war in a little bit different way comparing with Western countries. For us, it's a very good motivation to work on defense, to improve things, and especially to make them real. And real, I mean like working in the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Really, yeah. And you're getting great experience for free, really, aren't you, with Ukraine? It's a bad way to say it, but okay, that's the end of my questions. Is there anything else you would like to add that we haven't mentioned about drones or Granta in general?
I think we talked a lot of things, I'm very happy having this conversation.
Very good. That's been very interesting. Before we go, is there any social media, websites, videos, anything you'd like to promote to our audience?
Yes, we have Grantas Autonomy LinkedIn, where we post our videos from the battlefield, from our tests of our UAV, our insights about the battlefield. So yeah, please feel free to join us and follow us.
Excellent. I certainly will have a look myself. That sounds fascinating. Other than that, thank you for your time, Gediminas. That was very, very interesting.
Yeah, thanks very much.
That concludes this episode of Lexicon. Thank you all for tuning in and being our guest today. As always, follow our social media channels for the latest science and technology news. Also, don't forget to explore IE Academy for new courses. Goodbye for now.